Growing recognition of the terrorist threat did, however, result in legislative movement. Gathering together an assortment of proposals that had languished in Congress for years, Clinton sought to strengthen the government's hand in combating international terrorism. He introduced the Omnibus Counterterrorism Act in February 1995. At first, the new bill languished as well. That changed with the Oklahoma City bombing on April 19, 1995. After collecting recommendations from domestic law enforcement agencies to strengthen the legislation, the administration resubmitted a more comprehensive bill the next month. With the partisan warfare between House Speaker Gingrich's Republicans and the White House then in full spate, the debate on the bill became charged and nasty. By the time a final version emerged, a full year had passed. Another pivotal event occurred in 1995. Aum Shinrikyo released sarin in the Tokyo subway on March 20th. The event was a double shock for the counterterrorism community. First, when word of the attack arrived, no one could be found in the U.S. government who had heard of Aum Shinrikyo, though the cult boasted thousands of members, was headquartered in the capital of one of America's closest allies, and had an office in New York. The attack also pulled the rug out from under one of the hallowed verities of counterterrorism, namely, that terrorist groups might want to acquire weapons of mass destruction for the sake of bargaining leverage, but would not actually use them. Because of the general abhorrence of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, it was believed that terrorists would be loath to alienate possible supporters by using them. That kind of mass killing would also harden government attitudes. The only conceivable response to those who use these weapons would be the complete destruction of their group. The events of the year were not lost on the White House. While Congress was working on the various pieces of legislation, the National Security Council took a hard look at the federal government's ability to sort out the many knotty issues involved in terrorism policy, and in particular, to respond to a catastrophic act of terror. There was a general feeling that terrorism involving weapons of mass destruction might be just over the horizon, and that the country was not ready. The White House embarked on an ambitious effort to end years of ad hoc, reactive behavior, and organize the government's efforts. The instrument for doing so was a presidential decision directive. Every administration, in a display of the narcissism of small differences, gives its own name to these documents. The first Bush administration called them National Security Directives. The administration of George W. Bush calls them National Security Presidential Directives. These directives, which are almost always classified, provide the essential guidelines for broad areas of policy and set out the roles of different agencies. On June 21, 1995, Clinton signed PDD 39, among the most important of his presidency. It was probably the first major policy document to address head-on the threat of asymmetric warfare, in which an opponent who recognizes American military superiority tries to attack America by targeting civilians with unconventional means. It cut away a thicket of conflicts over agency responsibilities for matters ranging from handling an overseas attack to who should hunt for a terrorist's nuclear weapon. For the first time, it delineated the jobs of the different government agencies in consequence management. Who, for example, would take the lead in Washington? Who had responsibility for the care of large numbers of wounded or sick victims? Who would deal with the environmental cleanup? The concentration of authority was recognized by everyone in the interagency to be the handiwork of Richard A. Clark. With the support of the NSC leadership, Clark used his position as chairman of the CSG, this originally stood for a mysterious coordinating subgroup, and later for Counter-Terrorism and Security Group, which brought together high-level representatives of the Departments of State, Defense, and Justice, the CIA and FBI, and others as needed, to drive the administration's efforts. The CSG was one of the oldest interagency groups in the government, its roots stretching back into the early 1980s. Its function, however, was to handle crises, not to be a policy forum. Counterterrorism policy discussions were handled by another group, chaired by the State Department. Early in Clinton's first term, Clark characteristically threw a bureaucratic elbow at the State Department by announcing that he would not attend their meetings. From now on, they would be attending his. PDD-39 formally enshrined that shift of power.